10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning.
Live from Qatar, this is The Morning Break with Dorian Brown.
Good morning. The dust begins to settle after a whirlwind first few weeks back. And although it'll take us a few weeks for us to get back into the groove, I hope that you all agree it's good to be back doing what we do. I'm Dorian Brown. It's Friday, the 17th of September. We are live on Teachers Talk Radio. Today, we'll be discussing philosophy for children and discussing its use within our classrooms. Please call, text, or tweet in and have your say.
Live from Qatar, this is The Morning Break with Dorian Brown on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
The very best of best. Goodness me, I can't speak this morning. The very best of mornings to all of you, and thank you for joining me this morning for the Friday break. Yes, you heard the F word. It is Friday, and that means that the weekend is upon us. So rest, recovery, recuperation, and anything else beginning with R is upon us before we go again next week. I wonder what next week will bring, since speaking to you all, a lot has happened. Britain have a new young hero in Emma Raducanu. The government reshuffle has meant we said a fond farewell to Mr. Williamson and a energetic hello to Mr. Zahawi. On top of that, the ink on the new EEF toolkit is still wet and chatter on Twitter has already begun. But all of that is concrete fact and reality. So today we turn our attention to a slightly more abstract approach. We're discussing P4C, or philosophy for children, and I'd like to welcome my guest Damien Walsh into the studio. Welcome, Damien. Are you there, sir? Let me see. Hold on.
Hello. How are you?
Yes. Ah, hello, Damien. I can hear you now. Are you well?
Yeah, doing very well, thank you. Enjoying the Friday weather, the Friday feeling. So, ready for the weekend.
Now, normally I use the guest's Twitter bio to introduce them. So for you, it's quite short and sweet. It's joined October 2014.
Well, so, I like to be quite succinct. You know, it's that's important, I think.
Absolutely. Less is more. So I wonder if you would kind of perhaps maybe open up that door a little bit wider for us and get us to know who you are. And really, I guess the first question is, who are you? And give us a brief outline of your journey education so far, please, sir.
Sure. I'm originally from the UK, as you may have told. I mean, my educational journey is probably similar to some other people. Both my parents are teachers. And I grew up always saying I would never become a teacher. and gradually, as I progressed through life, I did my best to avoid it. But what I couldn't avoid was perhaps working with children and sort of the joy and inspiration that brought. So, for example, once my original degree was actually in multimedia. And I realized after a couple of years, sitting in front of a computer all day wasn't the thing which perhaps would give me a good drive in life. Mm. And I did lots of swimming teaching and coaching basketball and things like that. And that's where I really found my passion, working with young people. And eventually I succumbed to the inevitable of thinking, well, maybe actually teaching is the calling for me. So I did my PGCE like many other people did, and worked several years in the UK. And then eventually my partner is a teacher as well. And we decided, well, we'll spread our wings a little bit and see the world. Mm-hmm. And we got a great opportunity to work at an international school in Seoul in South Korea. Mm-hmm. And then we were there for a few years, and then we got to go to Indonesia in Jakarta, and now I'm currently speaking to you from Stockholm in Sweden. So it's kind of the grand tour.
Yes, so a little bit of a tour of the world, if you like, and ending up where you are in Stockholm. I should obviously, for the listeners' benefit as well, if you do go quiet, it's because we might be interrupted by a Swedish telecoms engineer, if that's right. You're
that's
expecting
right.
your internet, your cables to be laid.
Oh, I've been waiting all morning. The anticipation has reached fever pitch as the hour came closer to speak to you. My heart rate began to increase, so... I'm expecting at the most inopportune moment to be interrupted.
Excellent. Okay, well, hopefully I've got a little bit of material to do some filling if that's needed. I've got a song for the listeners, so I guess for their benefit, maybe we hope that the engineer doesn't turn up just yet. So you're a class teacher. Could you give us an idea of your role or roles that you've had throughout this intrepid journey?
Yeah, it's been a varied... career. I mean, I've had several sort of leadership roles. I've coordinated a variety of subjects. At the moment, my role before this, I was kind of a philosophy for children sort of lead in the school. I kind of still am that, really, but my job mm-hmm. titles changed slightly to integrated learning leader, which perhaps is something we'll touch on a little bit later. But it gives me a real opportunity to focus on learning in the classroom and how we can use sort of the latest research to really drive an experience for the children, which is challenging and empowering, I would say.
And this is all under the so the role, your current role, even though it's not specifically P4C would be a vehicle for which you would do exactly that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I'm sure we'll come on to it in a little bit. It's something to sort of talk about, but it's something which I personally have found quite transformative to the way I approach learning in the classroom, and that's really made me view things. I mean, at the moment, I think we're almost spoilt for, I guess, CPD, you know, professional development that you can have access to. Mm. I think when I first got into teaching, the internet, all right, it was, you know, well, yep. it was 16 years ago, but, yep. you know, Twitter yep. wasn't really around. Yep.
Shouting up the stairs, get off the phone, get off the internet. I want to use the phone.
Yeah, I'm desperately trying to download this Doc 97. Come on, I need this for my lesson tomorrow.
I'm gonna put it on my floppy disk.
But I think that's kind of what it was like. And there wasn't much of a commit. You know, you were lucky if you got put on maybe one course a year at your local training center where the most exciting thing would be you'd get lunch out for the day, and you know, and there wasn't really that international community of educators you get now, where there's such a wealth of information being and ideas being shared. It's almost at times overwhelming, I would say.
I completely agree. It's like there's a huge all you can eat buffet, but you know, a million different stations, it seems. And I would say, you know, even before the pandemic, I think the pandemic was responsible actually for a lot of that. You know, a lot of people searching for CPD online, and I know Research Ed did a really, really good season or series, if you like, on with Research Ed Home, and I know that certainly got a lot of people engaging in those sorts of things for the first time. But as I said, even before the pandemic, exactly as you say, there was a lot more of an appetite, I think, and organizations facilitating that kind of online learning or sort of you know, courses being offered on a multitude of different things.
Yeah, and I think, for example, earlier in the year, I think it was in March, I attended a conference on philosophy in the classroom, which was in Australia. And clearly in sort of probably pre-COVID times, I would have never even got a chance to even dream of going to that conference, because obviously once you added in the flights and everything else, I'm not sure anyone would have paid up for me to go to that. But you know, there you are. You get an opportunity to collaborate with with people around the world, and what an exciting time it is for that.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. But as I said, one of the challenges, as we both agreed, one of the big challenges is that actually there is, you know, almost too much. And it's like we can be spinning, we're already spinning multiple plates in our day jobs anyway. And with this kind of almost tsunami of CPD coming towards us, how do we kind of pick through and decide upon the, you know, ultimately the one thing that we want to be better at the end of the year, really? It doesn't, you know, the approach of trying to improve yourself really quickly in a multiple different areas ultimately ends up in you getting overloaded, burnt out, etc. So really, it's about addressing that kind of addressing the need and finding the thing that you want to improve on, mostly from the offset. We have mentioned the acronym P4C a couple of times already. We will now try and kind of, some of our listeners may have heard of it before, some of our listeners may not have heard of it before. So we're going to have a quick advert break, and then Damien's going to give us a quick whistle-stop history of P4C and let us know why he thinks it's important. Join us in a sec.
Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
Welcome back on this fine Friday morning on Teachers Talk Radio Live. We are talking P4C, and my guest today is Mr. Damien Walsh, who is now going to give us a quick overview of what the P4C is all about.
Well, P4C, or philosophy for children, I think sometimes it's philosophy with children, sometimes it's also called, there's several sort of acronyms which are used around, but there is essentially at the heart of them, they have this idea of an inquiry-based practice where students really are empowered to take the lead in a discussion or essentially making sense of their understanding or experience. And perhaps a very important thing is the repositioning of the teacher as a facilitator of this. That's really central, so that you shift your teaching method to sort of the idea of philosophical inquiry, the importance of dialogue and vitally reflection in their lives. Perhaps I'll give you a little bit of history of P4C and you can kind of, that some of those terms I've just used, they might perhaps make a little bit more sense. P4C has been around for actually quite a while. I think some people think it's kind of one of these buzzwords in education, like brain gym or some other things we get. But it's actually been around for about 50 years, approximately. It goes back kind of, well, that's not quite true, because really, if we think about the great philosophers, the Greek philosophers, we could argue it's been around for much longer.
But yeah, philosophy itself is more than 50 years old. But yeah, it's around, I think, the 70s as a kind of a bringing it into the classroom. It was perhaps maybe when it was first introduced, and then it has obviously evolved over time, right?
Yeah. It's modern incantation, shall we say, was developed by Matthew Lipman, who was at Columbia University in New York. Basically, he was working with students and thought they really lacked the what we might term as critical thinking skills, and that he felt that when they would then go into the world, they would sort of be much more susceptible to not using those skills and basically being sort of... I've lost the word in my head. It's Friday. but essentially being susceptible to fake news, as we might term it today.
Yes. So,
and essentially he started thinking, well, you know, we need to solve this problem. So we need to devise some sort of educational program. So he started going back thinking, right, where could we start? And he started working in primary schools. Mm. And originally he wrote kind of essentially a curriculum. So you would have these stories, and then with it, you get a discussion plan and sort of concept developing activities that you'd work with the children. And that really sparked a lot of interest. So fast forward a little bit, and about the 80s, 1990, there was a documentary in the UK about him called Socrates with 6-year-olds. Right. And I think a group of sort of educators in the UK watched it and thought it was really interesting and something which could certainly be used. And that sort of brought around the birth of Sapere, which you might have heard of. It's probably the biggest provider of training in the UK currently. And they do lots of courses and sort of you can develop your skills as a facilitator to start your understanding of P4C and then how you might roll out in your school. And that sort of grew over a certain amount of time. Then there was a couple of years ago, there was the EEF did some research into it, and they found that it benefited children's reading and maths. And the newspapers kind of jumped on it. And this is where I think it got a really big, it sort of hit headlines. I think a lot of people suddenly became aware of it, that philosophy would improve all these other things. So suddenly everyone got very excited. Really in recent years, I've been doing a lot of work with Dialogue Works, and Roger Sutcliffe, who's and Nick Shanley and some other trainers who've been long involved with sort of the development of Sapere and P4C in the UK, have started look at how we can further integrate it, and they've created a course called P4C Plus, which has the 6 strands, which I guess we'll talk about in a minute, of philosophical teaching and learning. But also they've come up with something called thinking moves, which again is an exciting addition of how we can use P4C in the classroom.
Yeah, great. Thanks for that. So it kind of gives us a big picture of the history. And I think also now we'll kind of move on to discuss a little bit more of what that actually looks like in the classroom. Just one thing to pick up on that and the EEF report, which I sort of mentioned at the head of the program, as well as there being they've had a bit of a refresh, if you like, on the teaching toolkit there. The report in March, which was released on P4C in March 2021, did actually, you know, say exactly what you said in the way that, you know, the measure of success of P4C was done through attainment in English and maths. And so that made me think about the methodology employed there. It's like, well, how can we say success in philosophy? You're right. And, you know, if you're going to be kind of more philosophical, perhaps, and maybe a more critical thinker, maybe that will help your English and maths. But however, it's actually also going to help a darn sight other things as well, isn't it? So would you say that that's not not a fair measure really used in the EEF report, or is it impossible to measure these aptitudes?
Well, that's an entire discussion in
different
itself.
Show. Yeah.
I mean, the problem was that people jumped on this immediate link of, oh, P4C, great, let's get it in. It's going to improve our reading and maths.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Silver bullet.
Yeah, and therefore it was jumped on as soon as the second report came out, which really, once you dig into the report, was it kind of had many problems and sort of speed bumps along the way, not only in the sort of methodology, but I think also in the implementation in schools was just so varied that it's almost impossible to get a decent measure on something
sure.
like that. I mean, really, the aim of P4C, really, if we boil it down, is to make children have better wisdom, to be more reasonable. And really, how do you measure that easily? You know, that's, you know, if we can think of a way of measuring character and the type of people we are, then that'd be very, very challenging.
Yes, quite dystopian as well, and actually wholly unnecessary, I think, measuring, you know, you see these things, sort of character measures and indices and stuff, and, you know, they're very subjective, aren't they, in that regard. Just a quick hi to people that have joined us in the studio, and do let us know if you've got any thoughts or experiences with P4C yourself, or whether you've never heard of it before and you're here to learn more. Damien's going to give us a bit of a quick walkthrough about what a particular P4C, I don't know what we call it, episode or lesson might look like. So we've got Devakumar joining us from Saudi Arabia, Loretta joining us from Ghana. Hello, Loretta. And also Lauren listening from Sydney, Australia. So we are pretty global right now, Damien. So how would a P4C episode or lesson look from maybe, I guess, yeah, from a classroom? I have had the honor of being a fly on the wall in one of your sessions before, but for our listeners, maybe if you could just take us through a step by step and give us an idea of what P4C looks like in your classroom.
Sure. So just I think there's a little distinction that's important to make, which is often confused earlier on in P4C. P4C isn't a subject, it's a pedagogy, an approach to teaching and learning. So although people go, right, now we're going to do P4C today, often that's because it's the easiest way to get the ball rolling in your classroom. And so what I'll do is I'll describe for you what we might call a plain vanilla inquiry. Okay. And I'll give you a couple of examples along the way to kind of set it up. So usually an inquiry, well, it can take anywhere between, I'd say, if you want to, you want a really good chance, let's say if I was doing it with 5 and 6, where they can listen and talk for and concentrate on the conversation for a longer period of time, you're talking between 45 minutes up to even an hour and 15. It can go longer, you know, and I've known some where, you know, they're really engaged. So what you do is it's very important you structure the classroom. They're sat in a circle. Now, this isn't circle time, even though it's sat in a circle. So that's, again, an important distinction that they're, again, two different approaches. They're sat in a circle. The reason why we're sat in a circle is because then everyone can see each other, maintain eye contact, but also we're all equal.
No barriers. So
we begin with a session. We might do a little activity that's like community building or inquiry building. So, for example, one I played the other day in my class is that one person at a time has to stand up, and they're not allowed to talk to each other. They're not allowed to make any gestures or eye contact or anything. And if two people at the same time stand up, then we have to start the whole thing all over again. And obviously, inevitably, you get those children who want to be first all the time, who will just keep standing up, and then we have to start over again. But gradually, they learn that importance of looking at the body language of others and taking their time. Once you've done something like that, you present a stimulus, something to get the children thinking. So whether that be, it might be a newspaper article, it might be a video that you found on YouTube, it might be picture books, probably one of my favorite to use. I don't know if you know the old Frog and Toad books. They were some reading books from America. They are very rich in philosophical concepts.
If I just sort of butt in there just for a second, Damien, how do you determine what stimulus to use with your class? Is it because you want to channel them into a particular direction in terms of their thinking, or is it just, I'm just going to pick anything from anywhere and see where the journey goes?
Yeah, good question. Sometimes you do want to channel them towards a set of concepts. So you might have more of what we might call a closed inquiry, and that you're kind of forcing them to focus on a concept. So let's say you're thinking, right, we really need to perhaps discuss something about internet safety or something. And you find an article or a short video or a picture which stimulates something about that concept. And you kind of know that they're going to roughly go in that direction with their conversation. Sometimes you can give them the philosophical questions themselves, but remember, you're trying to empower the children, so that takes away a little bit from the process itself. I'll give you an example. The Giving Tree. Are you aware of that book at all?
I'm not.
Okay. So The Giving Tree is a fantastic book, and it's about basically this boy who he keeps visiting this tree, and the tree keeps... So it goes, I wish I had a swing. And basically the tree kind of sacrifices itself to please the boy. And then the boy goes, well, I wish I had a seat. So the tree goes, well, okay, you can cut me down and use the stump as a seat. And then basically the tree gives itself so much that basically it's got nothing left. You know, so you kind of can begin to think about, well, what kind of concepts would that bring up? Perhaps it might be selfishness, it might be friendship. So
almost like what perhaps maybe many teachers felt like at the end of last year.
Just a little stump with the children.
Yes. We've given everything.
and once you've read the story, I always give them a little bit of thinking time. So they think about, well, what puzzled them about it? What questions did it make them wonder? What concepts might be in there? And obviously you would introduce them slowly to the idea of concepts and how to build questions. And then what they often do is go into little groups, and they come up with maybe one or two questions which they think it's fruitful to discuss. Now, the way I explain it to my class is I often say, right, you've got to come up with a question, but it's got to be a question which we could go outside of this room and ask anyone about, and they'd still be able to answer. So, because otherwise we always get the, why did the boy cut down the tree? Now that might lead to philosophical inquiry, of course, but you know, getting them the idea of what a philosophical question is important.
That's quite a difficult kind of place to get. I mean, did you say sort of year 5, year 6 students that you're doing this with, getting them to kind of just come up and formulate those types of questions is a skill in itself, isn't it? And just while you're kind of talking there, you know, I have a question for you as to how P4C is maybe different, maybe some secondary school teachers that have taught using Socratic seminars before, and kind of asking what the difference is between the two of them. Because what I've found is that the time it takes to, you know, these things, whilst kind of enriching, they can take an awful amount of time to get set up and get everybody in the mode, if you like, of, you know, this is how we do it and this is what we do and this is how the types of questions. But I think once you get to that kind of panacea of, if you like, of everyone knows exactly what we're doing when we are doing this, and this is how we do it, you know, our modus operandi, that's when you start to see the real value and the richness that comes out of it. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So often what you often get is teachers who are really enthusiastic by the idea of P4C. So let's say they get to that point and they get the children to write their questions, and the questions are perhaps not as fruitful as you would have hoped. Mm. And then they come away from the session and they think, well, they just can't do it. They can't do it. You know, it's not possible. But that's the thing. You need to train the children up, and they end up getting a nose, I would call it, for a good question, a good juicy question, which will spark discussion. Because obviously once they've written their questions, you might discuss them, which ones perhaps are about the story or which ones are more philosophical in their nature. And then they get to vote which one they want to discuss. So again, that's a often with a Socratic seminar, you start off a question as a facilitator to get the ball rolling. And this is slightly different, that the children perhaps are a little bit more empowered at times to sort of make that choice.
And Lawrence just texted in there and said actually that she loves that method that you describe of garnering questions, and she's going to find that useful in her classes. I wonder if you find yourself in that situation. You know, obviously with the classes that you work with regularly, they get to this idea of what a juicy question is. How do you have any control over if you're seeing 3 or 4 or 5 different questions on the floor in front of you and the kids are all voting for one which you probably in your experience could fast forward and go, actually, that's probably not going to be a very good one compared to the one right next to it, which is going to be amazing. So how do you, I guess you don't have any control over that?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I'll give you an example from when precisely that's happened. So we're watching, there's a great video. I think it's called The Wall. Maybe if it's all right, I guess we could post some of these things up I'm mentioning.
I'll put a list of things of your suggestions in the show notes so listeners can kind of go back and have a little look through after.
So this is a little video, and it's about these two men in hospital, and one's hinted at that he's got some sort of eyesight problems, he can't see, and the man in the other bed is describes for him what's happening out the window, and he's like, wow, there's, you know, that basically he describes these people to sort of a man and a woman, and he proposes marriage to her, and then they fall in love and they go away. Anyway, fast forward, it ends up that unfortunately the man who's been describing it dies, and the blind man's left, and he asks the nurse, "Oh, could you describe what's going on outside the window?" And she pulls back the curtain, and all it is a brick wall. You're thinking, great, right? So then they come up with their questions, and so we had 4 questions on the floor, and we had things like, "Is it ever right to lie to somebody?" You know, and there was one about like reality. How do you know if something's real? And then, and then the last question was, what happened to the man's eyes? And so in your mind, as a facilitator, you're like,
please don't go with the eyes.
You're like, oh, right. Okay, guys, time for a vote. So they do a vote. And basically I do it often. There's lots of different ways, but OmniVote's probably one of my favorites in that they close their eyes and they can vote as many times as they want. So if they really wanted to, they could vote for every single
three.
Or, you know, 2 or whatever. So anyway, you know, their eyes are closed, hands are up, and you're going, right, okay. Is it ever right to lie? Right, 4. Okay, I'll write that down. Anyway, is it ever right? What happened to the man's eyes? And it was like 14. You know, it's a landslide.
But hold on, they all had their eyes closed, right, when they were voting?
Yeah.
Right, I've already solved it. It's all good.
Well, that's, I think, in their mind, because they're sort of bombarded with questions during a day where they like to know they've got the right answer, and there's a clear, almost clear cut, oh, I've definitely got something, I don't have to do much thinking about this. They kind of go for the easier option. So they went for that. And we started, so then you open the discussion, and the way it works is that someone puts their contribution forward, and then what we do is we put hands on a knee. So the person who's just spoken gets to pick the next speaker. So my role is really every so often to jump in and push for further depth. But obviously I thought today I'm going to let this one go, and they'll quickly see that there's not perhaps as much juice as you would want out of that. So I think
you can go back to one of the original questions.
Exactly.
Just to ask as well, are you part of the circle in this, or are you kind of around the outside of it? How does that look in the classroom?
Yeah, so I'm sat as part of the circle.
As a circle, right.
And I'll contribute. I'll ask, oh, can you give an example of that? Or has someone got a different idea to that? So I'm sort of prodding them to really push for depth. And reasoning
and that takes time as well, right? Time as well, because I'm thinking if you know that question, does anyone else have any other examples? And then you get a wall of silence, for example. So again, over time, what strategies is there within P4C that allow students to feel comfortable to contribute and you know, not be afraid to get things wrong, because there isn't any right or wrong in this story, is there?
Well,
reel him in.
Yeah, there's several things there. I mean, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the first question again? I got so distracted by your last comment.
Well, let's just go there straight away. It's just the idea of how do we get the students to? I mean, within this, you know, this sounds like over the weeks or the months, etc., of you doing it regularly, I imagine that the confidence grows over time as the students feeling that they're able to contribute and they're obviously upskilling in the way that they can carve these kind of questions worthy of further exploration. So, but I guess for listeners that are maybe going to go away and maybe think about trying something similar, they're going to be in a kind of a almost a novice position of leading the discussion. So how do we get the students to actually engage and willingly contribute and willingly give their thoughts and opinions in these discussions?
Yeah, I think originally when you first set it up, you'll find that probably the conversation is dominated by the characters in the class who perhaps contribute the most. Mm-hmm. Now, I think often a reason for this is that during probably a student's day, unless you're, say, using the lollipop sticks like Dylan Williams sort of advocates, that probably there's a very small percentage of students who are regularly contributing, and there's probably a reasonable sort of percentage which aren't really saying very much at all. And this is where in PFC there's the skill of those who contribute a lot need to give space to others so that they can actually listen to their different opinions. So something I try and do as much as possible, particularly early on, is break out into partner talk often. And that gives everyone a chance to say something to somebody.
And that's easy enough to do in a circle, isn't it? Because it's turned to the person on your left or the person on your right, as it were, isn't it?
Exactly. So you might say, get someone saying a nice little point, and you go, oh, that's an interesting thought. So now this person has said that they think it's, I'll give an example, they say it's okay to lie when you don't hurt the person's feelings, for example. Turn around, talk to the person next to you. What are your thoughts about that? And then suddenly they'll all turn around, and it gives the process energy as well then, because they all want to talk, and those quieter members talk again. And you go, right, okay, let's bring ourselves back together. Who would like to say something? And they put their hands out, and you'll find it's lots of hands are suddenly out because they've got a chance to practice what they're going to say with the person next to them.
Perfect. And that's exactly what you were doing in a cold call situation as well. Yeah, the turn in talk. And then when you're giving the answer, it's our answer, you know, rather than our feeling or our thoughts rather than just the individual's.
Exactly. I'm going to pick up on something you said earlier, though. That's all right.
I lay the trap for you. Yes. Go on.
so often, and I've heard this many times, is that I remember going, you know, people hear that I like teaching philosophy for children. You get some people who give me a very confused look. But then you get a few people who are really passionate about it. And also then there's a few people who tried it. And I remember someone said years ago, oh, I love PFC. I love that there's no right or wrong answers. Now, that causes a huge problem. If we take that approach, you know, how are we developing reasoning and critical thinking if we're saying that anything goes, any answer, you know, is fine? You know, if we've got to make sure that we're holding ideas up to account and that we are holding up, you know, a microscope to them, really looking at them closely. Is this always true? Is it sometimes true? Is it never true? Because otherwise the thinking of the students is never going to change. And, you know, if we're sending children into the world saying, yeah, whatever your opinion is, that's absolutely fine to have. You know, we know there are some opinions we would all agree are wrong. There are, however, many different kind of right answers, and we're trying to find what the best, most reasonable answer is.
And opposite opinions can also both be right as well, can't they? So
absolutely.
To navigate, it can be a bit of a minefield, perhaps. So maybe there's some form of some framework or something which teachers can use to navigate this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thinking aid, thinkers moves A to Z, which I mentioned earlier.
Yes,
a really useful tool. Which it was. It was sort of originally conceptualized by Roger Sutcliffe, but also some work by the philosophy man, who some of the listeners may have heard of. Lots of essentially, to give it a breakdown, it gives you an A to Z of kind of thinking moves that the children can learn about, but also you can learn about. Because sometimes when you're sitting in this conversation, this dialogue, you kind of find it quite overwhelming, and you think, right, what move do I make next so I can push this on? And I think the A to Z, so just to give you an example, A is ahead. So thinking ahead, what would this mean? And immediately you can think, right, it means ahead. Like C is connect. So, how does that connect to what we talked about earlier? And I really love those moves because they're so simplistic. But what you also find is you can use those moves in any teaching session.
And so it can be learned and developed in the P4C circle and then practiced outside of the circle.
Absolutely. And you find what happens, the more skilled you get and the more skilled children get, it gradually bleeds over. So something I've really tried more recently in sort of my career is adding an ethical dimension to what we're learning in schools. So for example, I used to teach a unit called Black Gold, which is all about oil, and you know, very very pertinent in today's society, the discussion around it and the issue. And I was really mindful to make sure that the ethical dimension was promoted in that topic so that we could have discussions, sort of P4C style discussions during other subjects. Like when we're looking at oil through the lens of, say, geography, you know, what impact does that have on people, on society? And I think that's a really important thing that sometimes we forget. You know, I know in recent years there's a lot of talk about, you know, the knowledge rich and skills learning and this constant sort of battling between those things. But I think often we forget about that ethical dimension of the people we're trying to help nurture.
Yes, I like that, and that's a big thinking point, I think. And I was thinking while you were saying that as well, is that whilst in the circle, in the P4C circle, obviously you've got them kind of developing these dispositions and perhaps learning off of each other to be, you know, to think about things from different angles and approach things differently, you know, playing devil's advocate, those kind of things. And we said earlier about how difficult it is to measure those things, but I wonder in your experience of delivering P4C, whether you've actually found you know, just day-to-day conversations or behaviors or how the students kind of has respect towards each other changed over time, or has how they argue changed as a result of them being within your P4C.
Yeah, absolutely. You find it really does. I mean, you know, it's not going to be an overnight change, you know, and I want to make that clear. You know, it's a gradual process, but what you do find is that children become often they see things, and I think we teach this a little bit, that everything's sort of black and white. In that, you know, children grow up and going, right, you know, don't lie. But actually the truth is there's an entire gray area between those two extremes. And I think they become much more aware of that. And they also become aware of the importance of listening to someone else's perspective, that it is valuable to do that, that it will benefit them because they get to hear something they've never really thought about, or maybe they learn something about the person which we never really knew. I mean, what's really useful is P4C kind of has four C's, we call it, within it. So you have, and they're sort of what we might term as four dimensions of thinking,
mm-hmm.
I guess, or sort of four zones of thinking, you could say. So we've got caring thinking, which is respect for the community of inquiry, you know, the circle, that's what we call the circle, that it's a community inquiry. And so maybe you've got respect for the process, maybe you listen well, maybe you understand how to value contributions. Then you've got collaboration. So how well do you communicate with others? Do you build on their ideas? Do you make sure that you've adapted your ideas and shown that you're being collaborative in that way?
And listen.
Yeah, yeah. And often I think that's a tricky skill in itself, to really listen. Like, the difference between hearing someone and listening is a distinction I try and make early with the students. There's a great... I believe the Mandarin character for listening shows it's made up of like your heart, of your mind, of your focus. And it really breaks down the elements of what it means to really listen to somebody. So that's worth looking up.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And I'm looking for a new tattoo.
Yeah.
So you've got caring and collaboration.
Yeah, and then you got critical thinking. So obviously that's where the questioning and the reasoning, looking for evidence, testing out your ideas, seeking understanding. And then the sort of flip side of that that works together with it is your creative thinking, while making connections and suggesting ideas and making comparisons or providing examples. And you find that the creative and the critical is the sort of inquiry side. But at the same time, you've got the caring and collaborative, which is more the community side. So what you tend to find is not only are you helping the learning in your class doing this process, because by nature, you're gonna encourage them to be more curious and they'll be more interested in their learning. They'll come and ask and they'll be much more... more interested in sort of the core of the subject that you're looking at. And like I said, whether that's ethical in nature or whether that's more knowledge, it definitely shows that they have that interest. And then on the flip side, you've got the community building. So that, like I said, you know, suddenly you've brought the class together and everyone's valued as equal and everyone's valued as having an individual experience that everyone can support and welcome. So it can be a really powerful thing. And often when I've walked into schools that have practiced P4C for a long time, it just has a slightly different feeling about it because that sense of community is really strong. And it's not something that – it's very difficult to put your finger on what it is.
But like we said before, difficult to measure those things, but it's just that kind of that sense that there is this feeling of community and respect, that you said. Damien, I think you've articulated that really well in terms of kind of what it involves. And I know that there's, you know, I assume sort of places on YouTube and stuff where we can actually see kind of P4C lessons in action as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a whole host of places you can go and starting places.
Great. So we'll put a few kind of links again in the show notes. Just sort of conscious of kind of moving forward a little bit onto our sort of next bit, keeping an eye on the time. I always kind of have these topics which could do, you know, which an hour never can do it justice. But just to kind of summarize there what you said, you know, you've kind of advocated for, you know, the use of the pedagogy of P4C within the classroom. Talk to us through kind of your process or what it could look like, and gave us some ideas about things perhaps how we could adapt those things and fit our practice, mainly in a primary classroom we're talking here, but potentially these sorts of things could also be kind of done in the secondary classroom too. I'll just kind of refer to a tweet that we had before the show from Andrew Rogers, and he said, philosophy in schools is now the spine of my teaching pedagogy. I love how it challenges students to think for themselves and discuss controversial issues in a respectful way. No wonder the World Economic Forum has 8 of their top 10 skills of 2025 that feature in the pedagogy. So, you know, it's clear from the tweet that Teachers Talk Radio put out that there is a lot of supporters of P4C, and a simple search on EBSCO, etc., can see that there's also a heck of a lot of research and writing done about its effectiveness or the efficacy and the positives that can be gotten from it. So the elephant in the room, we've got to listen to the news just now, but the elephant in the room, which I want us to come back to talk to, I know that there's probably a few teachers screaming into their radios saying, we don't have the time for this, okay? Mm. And so that's going to be, I think, quite a common barrier, I think, for people thinking that, you know, we've got a curriculum to teach, etc. Finding time in which to interweave what sounds like quite a time-heavy process is going to be near on impossible for them. So I'll give you the news to kind of think about how you might want to come back at that. So we'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Sounds good.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Tom Hopkins-Burke.
This is Tom Hopkins-Burke with a Teachers Talk Radio News special. Gavin Williamson has lost his job as Secretary of State for Education as part of a wider government reshuffle. Williamson, who had served as Education Secretary since 2019, has been criticised for his handling of schools and exams during the pandemic. Williamson tweeted he was particularly proud of the transformational reforms in post-16 education, in further education colleges, skills agenda, apprenticeships and more. Boris Johnson said last week that Williamson had done a heroic job of dealing with very difficult circumstances. Reaction to Gavin Williamson's departure as Education Secretary has been overwhelmingly positive. Shadow Education Secretary Kate Green claimed that Williamson has failed children and young people, their parents and our hard-working education staff during the pandemic. Sam Friedman, former Department for Education Special Advisor under Michael Gove, said that Williamson was by some distance the worst Education Secretary in history. And a statement from the University and College Union representing further and higher education workers said that Williamson was a disastrous Secretary of State who caused deep and lasting damage. Governor Williamson has been replaced as Secretary of State for Education by Nadeem Zahawi. Zahawi, who has previously served as a junior minister in the Department for Education, is also a co-founder of a polling company, YouGov. As vaccines minister, Zahawi oversaw the approval of a single-dose vaccine for children aged between 12 and 15. Zahawi caused controversy last year by claiming falsely that poorer parents would prefer to pay a modest sum for free school meals. That was your Teachers Talk Radio News special with Tom Hopkins-Burke.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.cre8tiveresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TT Radio. Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right?
Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. teacherslovestationery.club.
Welcome back into the studio at Teachers Talk Radio, and thank you, Tom, for the news bulletin there. You join me with Damien Walsh. We've been talking about philosophy for children, why it's so important, a brief history, and Damien's also given us some really good ideas that we can roll out into our classroom. I deliberately, just before the news there, put in a bit of provocation for Damien, and he's going to come back for all of the teachers that are kind of thinking that, you know, oh great, it sounds amazing, but I just don't have time to do it. And I just wanted to kind of support really the some of the research and some of the thinking that has kind of some of the evidence which has come out as a result of P4C, and I'll refer to a 2015 paper by Parmis Aslema. And it said that P4C can motivate children to take responsibility in recognizing their thinking and their actions, which shape who one is becoming. And then at the end, the paper claims that engaged philosophical inquiry is a crucial and necessary means for the emergence and further social and emotional advancement in pupils, where children can attain a stable sense of personal well-being. And this marries up nicely with what Damien was saying, in the way that, you know, it's not necessarily just this academic attainment that we're looking for. We're looking for this kind of holistic development of students. And if we can do that at the same time as teaching the knowledge and understanding of the content, then perhaps maybe that is the way forward, you know, to sort of weave philosophy for children into the curriculum itself. What are your thoughts on that, Damien?
Yeah, I mean, this is often, I think anyone who's a primary teacher knows that often we have subjects which get dropped off the timetable quickly. So you think, oh, I've got to do this. Oh, we just missed that this week. And there is a danger that P4C can become that thing. And often the argument is, well, how do you make time for it is the question. And I think the second paper, which you quoted there, actually is a perfect example. It talked about well-being. And if we think about it at school, the role of well-being and what importance we give to it. Is it worth spending an hour a week doing something which is promoting well-being for our students? I mean, I would hope everyone would say yes. But I think if you think, well, which subject is that coming? For the UK, we've got PSHE, which really has, I think since its inception, had problems of how it can be really effectively taught in schools. I think it's kind of, it was originally dreamt up by the government with the idea of almost character education, building sort of children into citizens ready for a democratic society. But then the teaching methodology was never really sure. It kind of melded into circle time and the problem is, if we want children to be empowered to enter a society which is democratic, does it make sense that we're presenting it through indoctrination of being stood at the front going, look, right, you've got to be nice to each other, all right? And look, you've got to share. And, you know, and I think it raises questions when sort of, that's almost the opposite of what we're trying to achieve. And I think through the process of P4C, surely that's a better vehicle where they're really discussing, because obviously children will discuss things that they experience, you often find with young children, it's friendship. It's fairness. It's, you know, can even go into reality and imagination, because, you know, young children often have imaginary play and all these things. The idea of, you know, all those things are really important. And for example, I'll give one. I showed a great video, and it was from a Dove advertising campaign. And they basically got these people and they said, right, run like a girl. And all these people on these awful like impressions of a girl running. And then they got young sort of children and they said, oh, run like a girl. And they actually did it sort of as normal. And so the question
and
came
then they said, fight like a girl as well, didn't they? I think I remember the video quite vividly. Yeah. Fight like a girl.
It's worth looking up. But I mean, it brought up a discussion in my class about sort of gender, about how women are portrayed as weaker than men, and whether that, you know, whether that's justified, and why do sometimes we encourage that sort of prejudice. And I remember there was a girl in my class who was really sort of given examples in society where, you know, it's biased towards certain genders and whether that's right or not. And yet we laugh it off and think it's a joke. And but surely they're right there. There's your PSHE lesson. Mm. You know, I think it's really important that we begin to see, like I said, I talked about adding an ethical dimension in earlier, you know, when you're reading books in English, they're usually rich with these underlying concepts. And I think a really good way, one of the thinking moves in PFC is zoom in, zoom out. Mm-hmm. So you might zoom in and look at a specific example. So you might be, I don't know, reading Wonder is a great book if you've not read it. And Jack Will sort of betrays Oggie in it. And you could talk about, is Jack Will a good friend? And then you can zoom out. Well, what makes a good friend? Well, what is a friend? And then you can zoom back in. And Peter Worley calls it yo-yo facilitation. So you know, switching between sort of concrete examples they've got to philosophical examples and switching forwards and backwards. And I think that's a really easy way of perhaps getting PFC discussions into your curriculum. I mean, sorry, I'm on my soapbox here, so I'm going to keep going.
No, please continue. Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It really is. While you just take a breath there, I'll just say sort of from what you've just said there is that actually, you know, the issue that I found with PSHE is that more often than not, it's taught by non-specialists as well, and people that, you know, there isn't necessarily always training available, etc., for delivering a lot of these things. So if we can actually deliver PSHE through our subject, but like you said, with that ethical dimension, that kind of, it just makes a little bit more sense, because I think teachers themselves will just feel that little bit more, you know, I guess for me as a geographer, it's potentially easier to talk about, you know, this idea of maybe empathy and certain concepts in terms of, you know, the state of the planet, etc. Whereas it might be a little bit more difficult to kind of weave these things in with other subjects. But I certainly feel that there's definitely a lot more scope and value for peppering our curriculums with this ethical dimension, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look back at, when you look in the QCA, in their sort of curriculum guidelines, they talk about sort of essentially using the big ideas which have shaped the world. Now, you know, surely if we're talking about big ideas which shape the world, once you really knuckle them down, you're talking about philosophy. You know, you're talking about those big questions. And I think kind of if you imagine the educational tree, I think philosophy really is the trunk with which all other subjects have come off. Because, you know, when you boil them down to the concepts like truth and fairness and, you know, conflict, really they're often at the root of a lot of the subjects we're teaching.
Mm. Yeah, and I've kind of made that connection in the past before having taught theory of knowledge. You know, it is taught as a distinct subject in the IB program, but the real value of it is actually seeing it, having those aha moments in your other subjects. You know, so you know, if you are doing, again, I'm not calling PVC a subject, but if you are versed or you have been part of the PVC circle in, you know, for a long time, you start to kind of have those dispositions and those feelings and those thoughts in a collection of other subjects and everything as well.
Absolutely. And also you as a teacher become much more skilled at asking questions which are much more open. I mean, there's that great study, I can't remember who to attribute it to be honest, but they counted the number of questions like in a day students get asked, and it's like, you know, a huge amount of are just procedural, you know, questions. Have you got your pencil? Have you got this? Have you, you know, and a tiny proportion are really questions which would promote what Neil Mercer calls like exploratory talk which really explores different ideas. And I think once you kind of tune yourself into opportunities, you can really get them.
Yes, absolutely. Sorry, but a little slip of the cursor there. The red light was flashing on in the background there. we are over our hour, unfortunately, Damien. But and again, we could talk about this, I know, for a lot longer. And I hope maybe it's been an absolute pleasure kind of having you on here and kind of dissecting this. And we will, for our listeners, pop a load of sort of links and suggested materials and stuff if they wanted to find out a little bit more about philosophy. I've said it so many times now. If they wanted to find out more about philosophy for children, for sure. And you know, I have just enjoyed this conversation so much that I hope that, and I know that you have also a heck of a lot more that you can, a number of different rabbit holes that we could go down into. So I hope that you would be open to coming back on the show at some point in the future after the dust has settled.
Absolutely, absolutely,
fantastic.
And hopefully, at least a couple of people who have listened would like think, oh, I think this has got something I'd like to have a go at, and I would say, do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Go in at the deep end and then hone it as you go. I just wanted to also just kind of finish up with the Gregory paper of 2011, which you might have read. Ultimately, it's in support of PVC, but it does make some, I think, valid points. And maybe I could just steal a couple of minutes of your thoughts from it as well. So if I read you the passage I felt fairly interesting was this one, and then let me know how you respond to it. So it says that the program of PVC has attracted overlapping and conflicting criticism from religious and social conservatives who don't want children to question traditional values, from educational psychologists who believe certain kinds of thinking are beyond children of certain ages, from philosophers who define their discipline as theoretical and exegetical, from critical theorists who see the program as politically compliant, and from postmodernists who see it as scientistic and imperialist. So a lot of big words in there, but as I said, Gregory kind of, I think, does make the point that, you know, it isn't a silver bullet. It isn't something that is going to sit well with everybody, and there is going to be the sort of polarized view of philosophy for children from various different kind of people. I wonder, firstly, I guess two parts. A, sort of come back on any of that. And as I said, Gregory does eventually kind of support the paper, you know, support PVC and puts across a way of how it can be used for good in classrooms. And then secondly, have you ever come up against any opposition from parents? I mean, maybe students perhaps, but from parents or even sort of team members, etc., when you've been trying to introduce it into school at all. So
yeah,
did you get that? Sorry. couldn't finish my question off there, sorry.
That's all right, we got there.
Cheers.
I mean for example, some of the things mentioned there, like beyond the children of certain ages, I guess that's harping back to Piaget and the idea that sort of they're not, young children essentially aren't capable of abstract thinking. It's kind of his sorts of thoughts on that. I would certainly disagree. I mean, if you look at Lev Vygotsky, who might be one of your favourite.
not.
So looking at the zone of proximal development and the idea that learning of being sort of scaffolding that Jerome Bruner kind of brought in as well, I think really shows that children are capable of that type of thinking. And sometimes we have this self-fulfilling prophecy that, oh, they can't do it. And then suddenly when a teacher tries this approach, you go, oh, the questions they came up with, I never thought they would come up. You know, it can be really
It's like the example you gave with the eyeballs. You know, one question that you might expect from students of that age, but then two or three other ones that kind of make you stand back and go, wow, they've come up with this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And we've
got to be careful that we're not sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy they're not capable of it, so therefore they're not going to be capable of it, and that's the end of that. I think picking up on there was the religious conservatives, I think, because the paper was written in America, there's probably great inkling towards that would put many in certain areas of society, they're very uncomfortable that it would question, like, for example, the existence of God or anything like that, you know. And I think it's important that you do take into account your context, and if there are conversations and there will be at times uncomfortable conversations because, you know, you're analysing your own thoughts and what society accepts. But generally, there can sometimes be areas which are uncomfortable and perhaps you might not want to approach. But that obviously depends on your school and your context, without going into specific examples.
Absolutely, no.
What was the second question? Part of the question?
It's just really if you've weathered, and thank you for kind of staying on for an extra couple of minutes. If I know your technician hasn't arrived yet.
No.
M25. is there an M25 in Stockholm? I don't know. the other question was, had you ever come across any kind of resistance, you know, from parents or other teachers in trying to implement P4C in a classroom or in a year group?
Yeah, generally, I always get them to come and watch a session. And once they come and experience a session, I've never had anyone go, well, that was a waste of time. They're always sort of blown away. They're like, wow, you know, everybody should be trying this, you know, that. And of course, some inquiries are sort of not as good as others, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're never going to get, it's like a lesson, you know. I think sometimes as teachers, we're a bit hard on ourselves and we set high standards that, you know, every lesson should be outstanding. So therefore every P4C session should be outstanding. But, you know, I mean, if you think about in football, how many, if you said to a football player, right, you've got to go out there in every match, you've got to be outstanding. Mm. I mean, how many, you know, there wouldn't be many football players left if that was the case. And I think we're too hard on ourselves as teachers. But I think experience it, you know, if anyone criticizes it, they should go and experience it. And I would say then they get to really see the power that's within it.
And the value. And what a great kind of sentence, I think, to kind of end the show with. Damien, it's been absolutely fantastic. There's so much in there. Unfortunately for our listeners, you're going to be able to download this from the Teachers Talk Radio website at ttradio.org, or you can listen again through the Podbean app as well. So thank you so much, Damien, for giving us your time. I really do hope that your cable gets laid at some point today. It's been a really fascinating to talk with you, and I hope that we can welcome you back on the show as well to give us some more of your pearls of wisdom.
Oh, thank you very much, and pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Damien. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.